Welcome, everyone. This is Kaylin Castell here with Daniel DiMario talking about how to blend combinations of archetypes, especially the ones that seem radically different from one another, so we can gain a deeper understanding of life intent via the natal script. This is essential information that will help you read your chart or the chart of others. So just a couple of things to keep in mind as we before we jump in here is, one is that it can really help to understand the archetypes as they express through the elements, water, fire, earth, and air, or the modalities, the householder, culture bearer, the self-interest, or in service to spirit modalities. And we'll be including this in our conversation. But for those of you who maybe feel it would help to refresh your memory and understanding, I'm suggesting you go back to listen to the videos that were specifically on the elements and the modalities that you saw at the beginning of this course. Because now that we've covered all of the archetypes in depth, you may find that these videos will provide additional insights and ahas, especially after you've listened to this recording that Daniel and I are doing for you now. So just keep that in mind, and those, of course, those videos are available to you and may be really helpful. So just something to keep in mind too is that there are certain signs that sit next to each other that are always in a different element and modality, and then of course there's others that are will be as well. But I just was thinking of the example because I actually carry this one of watery Pisces and service to spirit sign that sits next to fiery Aries that is a householder sign. And then fiery Aries sits next to earthy Taurus, and that's a sign of self-interest. So though you can see how the signs that sit next to each other will always be in a different modality and a different in a different element. So anytime that you have water or earth sign combination or an air and fire sign combination, with an air or fire sign. So you have, say, water and fire, or water and air, or you have earth and fire, or earth and air. These are the combinations that do require additional alchemy to really understand them how they can work together. So that's part of what we'll be covering with this larger perspective and understanding, and how we look at it from the perspective of the birth chart and how to understand that. So, So one of the things that we're going to talk about, Daniel and I just talked about this, is say if a person has a fire moon and a water rising sign, or they have a water moon and a fire rising sign, this is describing a huge shift from what the skill set is to what's being investigated or the new territory for the current life. And that is why gaining a solid understanding of the elements is so helpful. So again, you might want to go back and rewatch those videos.
Yes.
So the other thing I wanted to mention before turning this over to Daniel is that as you're listening to this recording, be sure you're taking notes about any questions that might come up for you on this topic. And if there are combinations that you have, or a family member or a friend or a client has that you don't understand and isn't covered, then make a note of that and be sure to write it down and send it to me so we can cover it in the Q&A. And then finally, we're going to go through this information. So think about books, movies, songs, or life experiences that you may have had or you know that somebody's had that could represent these or other archetypal combinations, and send those to me as well. So I think that about covers what I had in mind. Daniel, are you ready to take it away?
Yes, for a bit. Absolutely. Yeah. Let me hold forth here for a few minutes. in addition to what Kaylin has suggested, which is like the looking at the differences, the contrasts between the element combinations that are not rational, like fire and earth, or looking at the cross going across the boundaries from one of the modalities to another. I mean, those are obvious examples, and we can use some example. I can illustrate it by some examples here. But I want to add three additional categories, three additional ways of understanding, or let's say three additional frameworks to have in order to see what happens when you combine archetypes. The first is to remember that there are four of the mystery schools that are in a category called givers. Their whole motivation is not self, but is about how is it affecting others in different ways. Giver mystery schools: Virgo, Pisces, Capricorn, Cancer. So you might want to make note of that being a separate category. Those four. Okay. Then there's going to also be another category to keep in mind when we're doing these combination inquiries, and that is certain mystery schools are actional. They take charge. They make the move. I like the word actional. So action is stemming from them. And then there are certain ones that are not. Most of the time, you can see this in the paired signs. You know, like we have Aries Libra. And Aries is the actional one. Libra is not. Taurus Scorpio. Scorpio is the actional one. Taurus is not. Gemini Sag. Sag Sagittarius is more the actual one. Gemini less than that. And then you would have Cancer Capricorn, which is a bit more ambiguous. It's not as clear cut. Pisces and Virgo also not clear cut. Leo and Aquarius. Clearly, we have the actional one and the one that's not. Leo being actional, Aquarius not. So that's a second way of perceiving how the combinations happen. Remembering always that when you're combining them, the leading edge is always going to be the Venus or Mars position archetype, or the rising sign, even better. Because whatever element is, but also whether it's a giver or whether it's actional or not actional, are going to be important factors. Now, there is a third general additional category that I want to share with you here. And it's the difference. This way of explaining it, I'm going to share with you now, is an outgrowth of some changes that have happened in languaging over the last few years. As you all know, we're trying as much as possible to not have hierarchical language or judgmental language, or, you know, the language that is tied into historical relativity about gender or about ranking, things like that. Well, recently it was pointed out to me that the word hierarchical itself should be avoided. You know, so I frequently in the past have looked at certain signs, certain mystery schools as being hierarchical. And I used to say, well, certain ones are authentically hierarchical and others are not. But it was pointed out to me, well, maybe just we should get rid of the word hierarchical. So what could we replace that with? Vertical and horizontal. What would vertical mean? Well, there are certain signs, Cancer and Capricorn in particular, those two, that are top-down. They are vertical ways of doing what they do best. So what I mean by vertical here would be like teachers to students, parents to children, therapists to clients. Cancer and Capricorn being the most hierarchical of all of them. So that's a separate category. Well, there again, I used the word hierarchical, didn't I?
The
vertical ones. And it's intended to be vertical. And then you would have the ones that are for sure horizontal. Libra, Aries, horizontal. Taurus, Scorpio, horizontal. They're looking across at each other, not top down. Okay. So now you'll notice when I'm sharing these three additional ways of categorizing the mystery schools, I'm not listing all of them. You know, so these are separate categories that are sort of exist outside of the categories of the elements and the categories of the modalities. You know, there's also some additional ones that we could throw in just for further consideration. There are certain ones that are what we call free electron. You know, they don't bond, completely not associated with bonding. The two that are most free electron are Aquarius and Gemini. You know, so I mean, that's just another particular way we could look at the combination of these things. So we're gonna just come up with some examples here, we're not gonna obviously in this conversation talk about every possible combination. in fact, to give you a sense of our approach, we don't really want to give you suggested meanings of every combination. Because the whole point of shamanic astrology, when you form a relationship with the archetypes, is that you begin to get the insights directly yourself. What I like to do is to be in a position where if somebody comes up with an insight, I can say, yes, that's it. If it's completely way off, you know, then I can say, well, I would suggest maybe that's really not the fifth house, you know, or that's not the Sagittarius job. Maybe we want to think of it a different way. So rather than giving some sort of a cookbook recipe that, yes, this always means this, we're trying to get you to tune in directly to the archetypes themselves. And so hopefully these additional categories that I'm sharing here will give you some additional ways of tuning in to the meanings of these. So when we now start to look at the combinations, we could say that, you know, from an objective perspective, we could say, well, if a person has Gemini moon and Scorpio rising, on one level, yeah, we're blending the two. But none of these are exactly equal blending. I mean, that's because we're placing it within the framework of the progressive developmental directional flow of the soul. You know, so if we're blending Gemini and Scorpio, like if it's Gemini moon, Scorpio rising, Gemini is releasing its grip on being in control, and to be able to then be in service, to blend the best of Gemini, we could say, into being supportive of the individual coming into the, having knowledge and experience of Scorpio. So there's that kind of blending, but it's never an exact, balanced, equal blending, because it always has to do with this movement, this flow from one place to somewhere else. Well, before I go into give some examples, some very clear-cut examples of each of these categories that I've introduced here, let me just pause for a moment and see if Kaylin, do you have anything you want to interject here at this point?
No, I think you're doing great, Daniel. And I really feel like this is good. I appreciate that we're getting a chance to do this, because I don't think we always get a chance to do it in the 5-day events.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
so true. I think this is really great and a nice bonus for everybody. So.
Mm-hmm. Let me give a couple examples here. So if we're talking about, let's say, the vertical horizontal situation, a really good example here might be, say, Capricorn moon or Cancer moon. It could be like one of those two, which are arguably the most horizontal
Or you mean vertical?
Yeah. I'm sorry. The most vertical, the most hierarchical, or the most vertical. And what if the individual with a Cancer or Capricorn moon has Libra rising, or Venus or Mars in Libra? This, then, is an example of one of the greatest contrasts that could ever happen, of something purely vertical, and then they're trying to become personal. So it's the shift from vertical into horizontal. A good example of this would be, and here's an example of, let's say, what the mainstream astrologers would say, which does correspond to what how we would see it here, where you say something like Cancer or Capricorn, which is arguably the least personal, Capricorn moon anyway, and Cancer, it's personal, but it's vertical. But let's say, stick with Capricorn. Capricorn, which is arguably the least personal and most vertical, hierarchical, and so what if they have Venus and Mars and Libra or Libra rising? Now they're trying to figure out how to be personal or more horizontal. And that's a big challenge. It's like there's a disconnect between those two. But the intention is to shift to the more personal, to the more horizontal. That would be the intent. Now, another example might be, if we're using the category of the free electron.
Daniel, can I interrupt you for a quick second?
Yeah.
So one of the things that occurs to me is that when you're using the example of Capricorn Cancer moving to Libra,
yes.
And so moving from that vertical to the horizontal, what's interesting is that, because they're in the same modality, you might not think that it would be quite so challenging. So I just wanted to bring this up so that people can see that just because they're in the same modality and they have a householder,
right,
a culture bearer intention, it's so very different. And that if you're shifting from one to the other, it is like going into completely new territory, even though it's still staying in that same category of culture bearer or householder. And so I heard an astrologer, well-known astrologer, once say that the signs of the same modality all have something in common. And there is truth to that, but they're also so incredibly different, and you really just pointed that out so beautifully. So I just wanted to
such an important point you're making. Really good. And in fact, this next example I'm going to give is going to make the same point, really.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, here's an example of say, Moon in Aquarius, air sign. And then we have Libra rising, let's say, but another air sign. And so they're both air, different modalities, but both air. But here's another way of seeing how different this journey is, where we have Aquarius, which is a free electron, with a commitment to being free, to be spacious, to be boundary, without boundaries, to not bond. And then there would be Libra as a rising sign, where even though it's air, its objective is to create agreement-oriented partnership and relationship over time. So it's a great example of the extreme contrast between completely free and bonding. And as was once said by a person who was very important in my life early on, whenever I would talk about bonding, the individual would say, "That sounds like bondage to me," and that was an Aquarius moon speaking with a Libra rising.
Right.
It was so different. So there's an example of the same element, but a tremendously different approach to how living the life's journey. And of course, it would be said it the other way around, we have a Libra moon who comes into the life fully expecting and completely skilled at bonding, at defining who one is, what one is by who they're with. And if they were Aquarius rising, we could even say, or Gemini rising, either of those two, then they're developing in the current life, sooner or later, the capacity to know themselves just through themselves, to be free, to be unbounded, to be unbonded, and to be not having anything to do with what Libra's into, you see. So there's a big shift.
I used to read for this person. We used over many years, who was a Libra moon. It was a man who was a Libra moon, and he had Mars in Gemini, and I forget what his rising sign was, but so it's kind of that combination that you're talking about. And but he was so stuck in the Libra moon. He was getting married for the fourth time, and I said to him, "You don't have to marry them." Because he just could not get out of this. It's like, you know, to get to that place of having a more free and open and so on experience. And of course, the marriages didn't last. Go.
Well, I guess you just finished your example.
Oh
right?
I was just basically saying that this was a man with moon in Libra who was getting married for the fourth time. He had Mars in Gemini, and it just was so stuck in the idea that he had to actually be married. He couldn't not just have a relationship.
He
was always constantly getting himself into relationships, and so he was having trouble getting to experience more of that free Gemini spirit. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I just
good example. Yeah. So let me give another example. Now here would be where let's say the moon position is a giver, Cancer moon, Pisces moon. Those are two really classic giver moons. And let's say they're Leo rising, or Scorpio rising, or Taurus rising, self-interest ones, okay? Very clear-cut self-interest ones that no one would ever accuse or mistake Taurus, Scorpio, or Leo for being givers. Okay. So let's say these individuals have the giver. Well, the shift is away from what the culture and other people usually support people for being. You know, it's better to give than to receive. Service is its own reward. We need to give and give and give and give. And that's how God loves us. And that's how we get good return and results in our life. So in that combination, actually, the chart is giving a set of instructions that says, if there's anyone on the planet who's earned the right to have your own experience, to actually have your experience be about what you enjoy, what you like, what feels good to you, your own investigation, it is you. You get to do that now. And if you were to continue just to give, 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 and give, well, that would be considered to be, and we've talked about this before, it's like generic form of addiction. Then we can look at these combinations of signs as being an extremely articulate set of instructions. You know, kind of what we call it an intelligence test. Get over it and do something different. You have permission to be selfish. Yes, you do, as a matter of fact. Have it be about you, you know. So
I have to say,
also, go ahead.
I was just going to say that I have seen this combination, especially, I guess I have several friends with Cancer moon and, like, say, Leo rising. It seems to be practically impossible for them to get to the Leo in a healthy way. And I think that what I've experienced is that it's like they're taking care of everybody, they're doing the giver thing, but it's a giving to get kind of thing, because they want to be special, and they're using the Cancer moon and their giver abilities to be recognized as special, and it just won't get them where they want to go. And so they find themselves frustrated and mad.
Totally, yeah. And then that becomes one of the clearest cases, most clear-cut cases of the strategy that an individual uses to get over their identification with their moon. you know, so there's the giver, but then ends up giving to get. I'm not trying, certainly a healthy giver is not giving to get. I mean, it's a situation where you're giving and then there's a really natural flow with it. You're loved and valued for it. Because this brings up the other side of the story. What about a Cancer, what about a Leo moon or a Taurus moon? Who has Cancer rising or Pisces rising? Which are the clearest cut versions of givers? Then the honest mistake individuals frequently make is they know that somehow they're supposed to be giving. You know, so they give. But then they get drained. Or they give too much. Or they end up being in a circumstance where they don't know what else to do but to keep giving the same way. And they've lost track of the fact that if you're a healthy giver, you're getting as much back naturally in giving as if you were receiving. You know, so that's a lot of the training often that the newcomers to giving have to go through. I mean, it's sort of parallel to the Liberizings, you know, where they somehow know they're supposed to be able to have a wife or a husband or a boyfriend or a long-term relationship. So they're in one. And they stop looking and noticing whether it's positive or whether it's healthy or whether it's progressive or whether it's really a conscious equal partnership. But instead they note, oh, I'm in one. That was the point, right? And so they end up just stopping there. You know, like, so the Cancer rising, I'm a giver. I'll give everything to my kids, you know. But of course, then you die for them. You take on their wounds and suffering and the whole thing. So they're going too far with it. I mean, but again, that's in a category called honest mistake. So every one of these has a healthy expression, and frequently the rising sign, I mean, it's your newcomer there. It's new stuff, even though the directional flow of the soul is that way. So once you get a sense of the meaning of the different mystery schools, and then you see what the rising sign is, all life questions can be answered, at least generally, by applying the questions to that part of the chart. So anyway, those are three examples I've given. One is the hierarchy, the vertical horizontal dilemma, the giver non-giver dilemma, and then the actional or not actional version. Actually, maybe I'll speak a little bit more to that one. Let's say there's somebody with a Taurus moon, the receiver, and then they have Aries rising or Scorpio rising. Now here's an individual, usually the Taurus moon, you know, they come into the life with the expectation that they're the honey and everything will come to them. They don't have to do anything except be tasty. They don't have to do anything except be aesthetic and pleasant and pleasing and beautiful and aesthetic and all that, okay? So what happens to the individual if they come into the life with an actional ascendant? You know, maybe it's Venus in Aries. Maybe it's Scorpio rising, Leo rising. Well, then what that person in the current life has to do is to learn how to be the one who takes the action. How to be the one who drives the experience, not just waiting for it to come to you. Now, if we turned it around, could be have the mover and shaker for lifetimes, you know, the Aries moon, but now let's say they're Taurus rising or they're Virgo rising, which are not actional or mover and shaker rising signs. Well, then the individual has to see what it's like not being the one who's the precocious runner of the energy. Okay, so do you have some examples you'd like to offer, Kayla?
the thought that came up for me, Daniel, when you were talking about the givers, and especially like the giver moons, And so just in terms of thinking of strategies, if you say you had a client who had a giver moon and based on your conversation with them, and they're supposed to be moving to, say, you know, Scorpio rising or one of the more ones that are focused on self, and they're just giving and giving and giving and finding themselves in a frustrated place. The question you could have them ask themselves is, what is their motivation for giving? And if they're giving because they get a lot of joy out of it and they get a lot of sense of satisfaction and fulfillment out of it, and they're feeling fulfilled and rewarded just in that doing, then they're good. And we've talked about this, I think, probably at other times in the class. But I was just thinking about that would probably be a good question even for somebody who, say, had Cancer or Pisces rising, to see if they're in a place of maybe an honest mistake, and if they can get in touch with what's the motivation for them to do that, that might be helpful. So it was just a thought that came up.
Yeah, it's true. The very same kinds of questions can be applied to both the moon and the rising sign in a situation like that. The thing is that what you really have to do is get the person to be able to tell the truth about it.
Yes.
I mean, the person with a Cancer moon, Pisces moon, Capricorn moon, the giver of moons, are so over-identified with that usually that they may not even want to say what their experience actually is. Why? Because they're supposed to be the selfless givers, you know, the ones who have sacrificed everything for everybody else. You know, how could you say that you're not, you know? And so there's a instinctual connection to continue to say that. And fortunately, in the life process, most people who are that addicted to the overgiving program, you can see it in them. You know, they eventually reach a point of exhaustion. It's a point of being drained and hungry for something else. And so we as shamanic astrologers like to point that out to a person. You know, when the person is ready to hear it, all right, here's the set of clues to liberating yourself from that yoke. Then if it's the rising sign, then it's a slightly different thing because there it's like the formula is you get to choose something that for where you're giving. And you feel really good. It's like you feel, healthy at the end of the day. You feel like as much coming back to you as going out. Just a natural flow. And any time, either one, whether it's the ascendant or whether it's the moon, whether it's the old story or the new story, if at any point you descend into that real shadow of the givers, which is to give to get. Mm-hmm. Which is understandable that you could reach that way. I mean, like, geez, I've given everything. How come I'm not getting a fair return? Well, maybe that's the way the universe set up the set of conditions for you to learn to just stop giving. You know, not that you're going to force God to go past the set of instructions that you've already been given.
And maybe if it's the rising sign and a person's been giving to, say, someone, to a relationship or something, a job that is so far off of where they need to be, there's no return coming back. So that it's not that they're the giving isn't good. It's just that it's in the wrong place. So they need to just reevaluate that so that they can get back on track. And so because if it's the rising sign or the Venus or Mars or some progressive part of the chart, it should definitely feel good. And if it's not feeling good, then it's important to look at the deeper reasons why that might not be happening. So if you're a counseling astrologer, you want to be able to ask the questions that can help to get to these root places where maybe, you know, it's not just necessarily, well, you're a giver, you should be having a good experience. Sometimes it's because we're just giving to the wrong place.
Right. And then the more extreme cases where, you know, you're objectively a fabulous giver. This really true. You are. However, unfortunately, the current life is about getting over that, so therefore you're going to hit the wall.
Right.
It's the same thing with the Scorpio moon, you know? I mean, like we have, so say the person who's been in the Scorpio school, it's the Scorpio individual, and I'm speaking here of what would happen if a person had a Scorpio moon, all right? So they're the person with the strongest will. When Creator has allocated will, they gave Scorpio the biggest will. But what if a person's too over-identified with that? What if they came into the life to be more Piscean, you know, Scorpio moon, Pisces rising? Well, usually the universe sets up a strategy to liberate a person from their identification with the Scorpio moon. That is, have a challenge that is so extreme that even their greater power than anyone else can't overcome it. And they still want it. They can't pretend they don't want it, but nothing that they can do will allow them to get it. So there's the surrender of the will that happens there.
And I've seen this happen where if a person understands that and they're coming up against a situation where there's no possible way for them to prevail in what they desire, mm-hmm. And they do just say, okay, you know, I surrender, mm-hmm. then it often happens that what they really wanted does work out for them. In sort of a magical kind of way. It's like, whoa, they didn't expect that. And I also have had the experience with the Scorpio moons who will complain about how people, they seem to get into conflict with people and they don't understand why. But it may be because they're running their control program and they're not even seeing that they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And other people are resistant to it. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a general thing we could say about pretty much all the moon positions, is that unless the moon is just horrendously invalidated and violated, almost everybody does unconsciously project the energy of their moon. You know, it takes a while for that to shift into some other part of the chart. A Capricorn moon person, there's a certain emanation that comes from a Capricorn moon person. You know? whether that person's working on something else, I mean, there's still that flavor, that veneer of it that's there. What do you do about that? You become aware of it, you know, and you maybe have some humor about it. Or you'll take into account that maybe you're being seen that way when actually you had a completely different motivation than how you were being seen. Maybe then let us look at some of the irrational combinations, which would be at the beginning of our conversation here today. And I think I made note of this in passing near the end of last class, and you brought it up at the beginning of this class, Kaylin. It would be like the signs, the mystery schools that are right next to each other. And then of particular interest are the mystery schools that are at a 1-6 or 1-8 relationship. Which are called in regular mainstream astrology, it's called the quincunx aspect. So, for example, Aries to Scorpio or Aries to Virgo, 1-6, 1-8. Taurus to Libra and Taurus to what? Sagittarius.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can go around the wheel like that, 1-6, 1-8, and you get these elementally irrational combinations. So what happens when you have that? Keeping in mind that we always know from the rising sign or through Venus and Mars, Venus on a woman's chart or man's Mars, what the directional flow is toward. You know, so that we're actually, there's a directional flow. We're moving toward one and away from another. But in the blending aspect, these are some of the more, well, that's why we're using the word irrational. Years ago, when I first came up against all of this, rather than saying it's a disconnect or that there's no connection or they cannot see each other or make it sound like too bad for you, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. I mean, I'm not trying to say there isn't some truth to those statements, but rather there's I wanted to create a different context for understanding it, and that is that we call these the alchemical combinations. So to blend them together, you need to create a container that's bigger than the both of the two of them. I mean, so it's rather than just mixing, all right, 50% of this and 50% of that, you need to have something larger than 100%, or actually, you know, some of a bigger container than the two of them, so that they can actually blend in an alchemical way where you don't really know what's going to come out of the other side of it. I mean, it's a magical process when you're blending together like Aries and Virgo, Aries and Scorpio, Taurus and Sagittarius, and so on. Let me just use one example, and this is one that I've had a lot of clients that have this combination, and that's the Taurus-Sagittarius one. Which is really intriguing. It has an older history that we've tended to forget about until just recent times. So you have Taurus, which is like the courtesan or the hetera. The intimacy is art, beauty and aesthetics, receiving, the imagery of having an incredible pleasure in the body for its own sake. Epicureanism to the max, Taurus. And then you have Sagittarius, which is a quest for meaning and purpose. It's mental consciousness, to boldly go where no one has gone before, the Jnana Yoga, the mysteries of what is the truth, you know, the love of truth, more about spirituality. The body is only there in order to take us to the mountaintop, or to be able to maintain an erect spine in meditation, you know. That's very different than the enjoyment of the body for its own sake in Taurus. Now, what could be combination there? Well, there does exist a tradition, both in places like India and also even in the Western world, up until a certain point in history. And it was the idea that a courtesan or a hetera, a person who's specializing in intimacy and art and beauty, could also be a spiritual seeker and an intellectual. So we remember that as like the women who might be hetera or courtesan were also the ones that were allowed into the libraries. They could actually have they could train their minds, which during many times in history, women were not allowed to read and write. You know? they were kept as just a baby maker making machines, you know, to be in service to a husband. So that's a good example, I think, of the blending of those two, which we don't normally think of.
I was just thinking about the movie Dangerous Beauty, and how she's very Taurian, of course, you know, in her thing, but there's the particular scene where she's in the sort of like a ancient form of rap, you know, the poetry thing where they're just coming up with poetry in the moment, and she outdoes the guy. Which seems like that's more of definitely of a mental, you know, kind of air quality of being able to really tap into that energy very quickly,
right,
and creatively express it, so that could be maybe like a Taurus Gemini combination,
right? And then, and also using that that movie as an example, there's an even more fundamental irrational or alchemical contrast that is being explored in that movie, which is Taurus Libra.
Right.
Which is one of the ones that got some there's virtually been no resolution to it. There's attempts to resolve it, which I think are not always that useful because they turn it into everybody is supposed to be a certain way. So what is the contrast that I'm referring to? There's the Tarian reality, which is intimacy as art, where relationship and intimacy is something worth doing for its own sake, and which does not include, well, I'm with you, you're with me, we're gonna get married, we're now gonna be an item, we're now husband and wife, we're now boyfriend and girlfriend. No, it's just intimacy is art, and that's the Taurian thing. And then Libra, which is, well, gee, you looked at me with love in your eyes, so that must mean you want to bond with me. You know, it becomes then all about I'm with you, you're with me, and you're the boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, and now we're an item, and it's going to be sustainable for, you know, for X number of years or for a whole life. Those are two personal relationship categories. They're definitely that, but they have different motives. And and I'm using that movie as an example because, of course, what happens there is if you're really authentically a hetera or a courtesan, one of the rules is don't fall in love. Or fall in love would mean, like, in the sense of I'm with you, you're with me, and oh, it's my beloved, it's my soulmate, that's the one I'm supposed to marry. That screws the whole thing up if you are in the hetera continent. Category. So what happens if a person today has those two? Is it an irreconcilable mixture? No. The person who carries it, and this might be a really good thing to bring up here at this point in our inquiry, if you have a combination that seems like unsolvable, like this one, or we can come up with other examples like Aries, Virgo. I mean, so certain ones that would seem unsolvable. The truth is, if that's the one you have, then it is solvable, and the person who is here to solve it is you. So it's the set of instructions that you have to work a synthesis, to work the alchemy, and because every one of the combinations can happen. There aren't good ones, there aren't bad ones. Cultures might say, that's a good one, or that's a bad one. That's one we want you all to be that one. And those, we're going to shun some of the other ones. But that's not our view here. Our view here is that all the combinations are valid, authentic, and we just need to be educated about them. You know, and then to have the courage to actually really to be yourself. How many people are really unhappy on this planet because they're trying to be a combination that isn't theirs? You know, so the first thing is to be to figure out which one you actually have. I mean, you can only be yourself. Mm-hmm. So this is what it is we're trying to provide a template for understanding. So hopefully this discussion will get you thinking about this, you know, first on your own chart and then other charts, and to see how these different authentic and real and valuable mystery schools can form relationships with each other.
It occurs to me, and I don't have this Taurus Libra one, on my chart per se, but it would be seems like the resolution would be to create personal relationship that is also intimacy as an art. But you could do it with one person. It wouldn't have to be with.
Well, yeah, and actually, I guess I hadn't given the example of how I've seen the resolution to be. What I suggest would be, oh yeah, it's a man and a woman, or could be two women. I mean, I'm not gender specific here, but like two people come together to be in a relationship. They do bond with each other, but the I'm with you, you're with me, but the person you're with is also your courtesan, your intimacy is art depth, you know, so that it's as if maybe in the old days, you go to be with a hetera or a courtesan, and it turns out that's actually the person who is intended to be your wife, but once you get married, that doesn't change. You still have the depth of intimacy for its own sake. It's not, and it doesn't degenerate into, you know, wifely duties or something like that.
And it occurs to me...
Now we're going to have babies, and the archetypes totally change.
Right. It occurs to me, too, that in the Dangerous Beauty movie, that one of the things that stood in the way of that happening was the hierarchical aspect, because he was in a different elite category of, you know, the guy. You know, he couldn't marry her. He couldn't be with her, even though I think he loved her. But because of the way that the society was set up, he couldn't be with her. Mm-hmm. So it became unsolvable.
So we get to come up with new combinations, yes. New stories,
yes.
New mythos to about how these all come together.
Right.
And you can see we could probably speak another 2 or 3 hours on all the different combinations. But I think this is a good starting point. And the combinations you want us to speak more about, to give you insights about, please do bring to the next class.
Yes, exactly. So just a quick reminder to send those to me, because I will be putting them together, that anything that comes up that you want to have a deeper insight into. And also, if you can think of any movies or songs or books, and Daniel, you'll probably send me some too, right, for some combinations as well. So
I'll try to do that before I head off. Heading on Sunday for Göbekli Tepe.
Right. Okay, cool. All right, so thank you, and until we are on the Q&A, we'll see you then.